Manco Nawabu.
Manco Nawabu.
Sério?
Manco Nawabu. Manco Nawabu é um que mora debaixo da terra.
Aí, eu falei, esse aí.
Que se virou formiga hoje, que nós chamamos Una.
The consciousness side of this to me is also represented in meditation, psychedelics, near-death experiences, transcendental experiences, this UFO phenomena, even the flying saucers and the greys, they turn up in all of these different spaces. So what does that say? Is it a physical phenomena or a material phenomena, or is it actually able to transcend through different elements of reality that we actually don't believe are real, like the dream state or the astral realm or the psychedelic realm? Are these real? Well, these creatures, entities, objects seem to be able to traverse through our material plane and meet us on these other planes. Graham Hancock, for anyone who knows Graham Hancock, when he was in the Amazon basin and he took ayahuasca, he saw alien greys. Like, what's up with that? There was an Amazonian tribesman on a podcast not that long ago, and he was a straight tribesman. Like, he was in the Amazon basin. They didn't have a connection to modern culture, and these podcasters had basically found these guys and got them on for an interview, and they brought up the question of aliens, and they had no concept of what that really meant. They didn't understand what alien was. What do you mean, extraterrestrial? I'm not sure. They showed them a picture of a gray, and the tribesman went, "Oh, that's Makan." Say again?
Indígena não tem.
Como?
Alienígena.
Ela disse? O que que é?
Nunca, essa palavra você nunca ouviu falar, alienígena.
Alienígena, não. Isso chama-se Mayu Shibu.
Isso aqui?
Sim.
Manco Nawabu.
Manku Nawabu.
Sério?
Manku Nawabu. Manku Nawabu é um que mora debaixo da terra.
Aí, eu falei, esse aí.
Que se virou formiga hoje, que nós chamamos Una, que é uma formiga grande, chama-se Manku Nawabu.
Que essa formiga também é muito perigoso, né, Boina? Se as pessoas ficar mexendo com ela demais, ela leva o espírito da pessoa para
Pra
debaixo da
terra.
terra também. Para
Caramba!
voltar, tem que ser um pajé bem bom.
São seres que podem aparecer em luz divina, com a luz do Nishipa. São seres que a gente pode ter o contato, que moram debaixo da terra.
Makanwabu. It's an ant. It's a human that became an ant, and it lives in the underworld, and it can steal your soul, and you need a good shaman to bring you back. That's what they said. So they have a mythos on something that a lot of people would consider to just be a Hollywood archetype, right? But then you've got the Amazonian tribes people talking about Makan'wabu, and you've got the Aboriginal Australians who've got their cave paintings that I'm sure a lot of you have seen, which are questionable. And there's actually some pretty questionable Egyptian pottery as well. That seems to look like the Nazca mummies that we're finding now in South America. So it's a fascinating thing that this seems to be a material and immaterial element at the same time. And that's actually why I called my YouTube channel Project Unity, because I believe in a symbiosis between spirit and science. I think these are just two different ways of observing the same state of play. And we're getting closer to that. It hasn't actually been that long that we've been shut off in this way, this Newtonian reductionist model that we've entered into since the Age of Enlightenment, that everything's just dead matter bouncing around. Yeah, it's very enlightened. But that's what they called it. We've moved into we've got rid of the shamanistic. We've got rid of this, silly stuff from the past. Now we're just going to deal with basic science. But there's massive holes in that science. And that's being shown even more now as we're developing these models into, simulation theory and getting into these deeper states of understanding how the quantum level responds to your own consciousness. I mean, look at the double slit experiment. For anyone who doesn't know about the double slit experiment, this is a fascinating, weird mind bender for these Newtonian scientists. I think it was in the 1970s when they first did that, but it's been kind of, progressed on from there, and it still remains a bit of a mystery that when a electron or a photon is observed, it collapses into a particle. When it's not observed, it becomes a wave. Now, there's a few people who would dismiss that, and they say, oh, it's the act of measuring. It's the act of measuring that actually collapses the photon or the electron down into a particle. But there's no measuring without consciousness. Without a human being, without a conscious entity to measure, there's no concept of measuring. So it still comes back to there is a conscious observer, and reality is responding to that conscious observer. So what does that say? It says that there is, what, maybe a dynamic within reality, a coherence that understands that we're right there and collapses down into this particle function. What does that say about all of this? Solid reality. It's not so solid. You know, most of the scientists now in physics, like the consensus is becoming, this is a simulation. It's a holographic simulation of some form. You know, you think of like a bike wheel. On a bicycle, and you put your hand through that, you spin it really fast, boom, your hand just bounces right off it. Now, it's not solid, is it? It's still got the gaps, but it's spinning so fast that you can't even get through that. So it's an impenetrable barrier. Now, the atoms and the protons and the neutrons, they are spinning so fast, everything is moving so quickly that it feels solid, but it's not. We actually know that now. It's not. It's energy. It's just lattices of energy oscillating at such incredible speeds that it's creating this consensus reality. I think that these UFOs don't have to abide by that rule. Whatever they actually are, they seem to kind of be above those levels of the game, of the laws, of the rules, right? They can bend it. They can cheat it. And I think that might be their purpose. Again, going back to this evolutionary driver, that they're actually almost like a carrot on a stick, always slightly ahead of us. And it seems to push people to want to try and replicate it. I mean, look at our governments, right? You know, they're interested in replicating it. Maybe they already have. But it's interesting to me that it seems to follow us through time. Throughout all of history, we've had phenomena. Throughout all of history, we've had UFOs, different forms, different shapes. And they seem to change and shift as we progress. And that to me is, again, I would invoke Carl Jung's idea of this collective overmind, that potentially some of this stuff is just stimuli for our species. Now, who's to say that that's not necessarily real? Because, again, the material plane, I think, is just one little slice, right? Just one little line we're traversing. But it's not necessarily the only line. This is really where I find the most inspiration when it comes to the UFO subject. It's trying to understand this intrinsic connection, this entanglement between human consciousness and this other. And why does it turn up when you're in these really powerful states, profound states, you know, states of love and appreciation? You know, people laugh that off. A lot of people are like, oh, you know, it's hippie woo-woo stuff. It's like, yeah, but I think we can all agree that love is actually the most important thing in all our lives, right? What's the point if you don't have some love? So I think that this is actually a teaching mechanism to try and get us to evolve. And I think we need that. Yeah? Yeah, I think we're at a point in the human story where our collective empathy is degrading. And it's not our fault so much as the society that we're all having to participate in. It's not a society that encourages us to explore the different corridors of perception. In fact, we're very locked off, sometimes to the point of, you know, it being a legal problem that you're exploring your own consciousness. Now, again, invoking Graham Hancock, he said this before, you know, the war on drugs is just the war on consciousness. Like, why do you have the right to tell me how to experience my own consciousness? So the fact that we're restricted by that system, you know, you don't have to invoke the Illuminati or anything, you know, sinister and kind of ambiguous. You can look at it as just there is a way society is established, and the way that you're thinking isn't really going to work in this society. We want worker bees. We want people to participate, be cogs in the wheel. It all works as a, you know, global economy. If you're sitting there trying to summon orbs and you're in an astral realm all the time, you're not participating. So they're trying to reduce that. They definitely do not want us to be in a state of open bliss with reality and to open our perception to these different ideas. And that's what kind of worries me a little bit about the way that this is being discussed by like the US government, for example. You know, I don't necessarily, there's a lot of people that would kind of say, oh, it's like Project Bluebeam, they're generating a threat narrative, there's going to be maybe an alien invasion, and it's all false flag, and it's a big psyop. And I mean, who knows, maybe that's right, but I definitely have noticed a clear narrative that is about this being a national security threat. You know, it's a threat to our sovereign airspace, a threat to our sensitive classified sites. And I worry about that.